Hello, I'm Goldie Sayers, Olympian and former javelin thrower.
And I'm Ollie Hind, Paralympian and former swimmer.
And welcome back to The Insider, the UK Sports Institute podcast.
Thank you to everyone who has joined us and supported Series 3 so far.
In this episode, we're going to focus on what can be a challenging time when athletes step away from their sport. I think both Ollie and I can relate to that and remember the emotions and difficult decisions we had to make. But there are people there to support athletes during this time.
Joining us to discuss this topic is Emily Hunton, who is the Performance Lifestyle Practitioner for Paraswimming and Paralympic Lead for Performance Lifestyle at the UKSI. Emily, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm very good, thank you.
Good, good. Could you start by telling us about performance lifestyle and exactly what it is? Obviously, I think athletes will be very familiar with that term, but some of the listeners may be a little bit less familiar.
So performance lifestyle advisors work across both Olympic and Paralympic sport. And there's roughly about 40 practitioners in post now. And we cover six areas, which we've tried to consolidate the lifestyle areas that we cover into six pillars now. And they are mental health and well-being. We have career development, financial health, learning and development, education and transition. So they're all the different areas that we support our athletes throughout their transition whilst they're in sport and as they transition out of sport.
Could you tell us a little bit about how important you feel it is for athletes to have other interests and passions outside of their sport and how that can kind of play a role in their performance?
Yeah, sure. And it is one of the things that we've really campaigned for over the years. And now we have a platform called More to Me, which really helps to highlight some of those different areas that athletes have been involved in, from, you know, doing yoga, mindfulness, meditation, all the way through to doing different training courses, having hobbies outside of sport like baking or cookery, or, you know, so that they can focus on other areas and it helps them with their identity as they sort of develop an identity outside of sport whilst they're still in sport, because then they've got those things they can kind of lean on when they do transition out of sport. And it helps to kind of take off that pressure when they're in sport, because it can be a pressure cooker. So knowing that they've got these other kind of hobbies and interests to go to kind of get that respite, that relief and that focus on something other than sport can really help with their mental health and well-being whilst they're in sport and as they transition out as well.
I certainly know when I decided to retire, which feels like many centuries ago now, but I do remember thinking, you know, there was a sense of mild panic about, you know, what am I going to do next? You tend to retire as an athlete, if you're lucky, and make the decision yourself in your mid-30s when your peers are established in their professional careers. So I remember thinking, wow, I've got to make up for lost time here. But also, I didn't necessarily want to commit to one particular thing because I'd spent my life up to that point doing so. And I didn't really want to perhaps make the wrong decision in inverted commas. But I think the overwhelming sense for me at the time was this sense of overwhelming freedom, which can kind of come as a bit of a shock to the system, although it was great at the time, but also not having that established routine. I mean, what are the challenges that most athletes face when they retire from professional sport or from a funded program?
Yeah, and like you say there, Goldie, it's really good point. That is one of the challenges a lot of athletes go through, that sense of when you've been so committed to a program, you've got that structure in place, like you know exactly what you're doing, you know exactly why you're getting up in the morning, you know what goals you're working towards. When that's just ripped away, you're left with a blank canvas, like a completely blank sheet of paper, and okay, what's my purpose today? What am I getting up for? What am I going to do? So we really try hard to kind of, I suppose, raise awareness of that's going to be the reality before athletes get to that point where they transition out, so that they know what they're going into, so that they've got a plan in place, they've got a new routine set up, and it kind of helps to ease the risk of that happening, that complete overwhelm of I feel lost, I don't know who I am anymore, what's my identity? So we really try hard to make sure we support athletes to have that routine, have that structure and know who they are outside of sport, so it makes it a lot easier in that transition. That connection as well that sport offers, like it's so dear and familiar to athletes, particularly those that have been in the sport for such a long time. It's like all of a sudden someone who you thought was your friend has all of a sudden disappeared, or a coach you've known for all those years hasn't contacted you, now you've left, and it can feel like a real significant loss. So one of our roles is to kind of help ensure that is minimized, and that athletes have got other focuses, and that transition is a positive one.
And obviously I've experienced it as an Olympic athlete. Are there any differences between transitioning out of sport for a Paralympian versus an Olympian, perhaps?
Yeah, there's quite a few differences to consider. So one of them is, from a kind of psychosocial perspective, thinking about classification. So some athletes have different journeys when it comes to classification. Some sort of categories feel safer than others, but nevertheless, sometimes unpredictable things can happen, and their lives can just pivot and spin on a sixpence, and they can become declassified. So that can come out of the blue sometimes. So all of a sudden they think that they might be in sport a lot longer than they are, and their plan isn't up to speed yet. So that can come as a shock. So that's kind of one. This sense that sometimes when it comes to classification, athletes can feel like, oh, I'm not disabled enough to be in sport. And yet when I leave sport, I'm classed as a disabled person, and people are treating me as a disabled person. So there's a real kind of mismatch in how an athlete then feels in sport versus how they're treated outside of sport, and that they're claiming benefits and all these kind of things, and would be deemed as a disabled person, but perhaps not in sport. And that's through the research that we've done that we know this is how athletes feel. There's other things around, sort of, if an athlete has an acquired impairment, for example, and perhaps they got fresh into sport as soon as they'd acquired their impairment, and that's all they've known. Sometimes they can have difficulties adapting to their new function, their new ability, their new sense of self once they've left sport. Sport can sometimes act as a cushion and, I suppose, a safe place where they can just hone their skills and just not think about it. And then the reality of transitioning out can kind of bring up a lot of things that they've perhaps pushed down or perhaps not dealt with. But that's where we can really kind of help with the support that we can offer. And we can also refer into other areas of mental health team and make sure that they get the right support they need when they transition out. So there's a myriad of different kind of factors that affect our para athletes that perhaps some of the Olympic guys don't have to think about quite as much.
A lot of what you just said, Emily, resonates with me personally. Obviously, I've been through that classification journey myself. Classification is a very complex area, and you know it's difficult to get your head around anyway. So like you say, for us athletes to kind of go through that, and then when things, you know, don't go as you expect, like what happened to me in 2018, I never in a million years expected that would happen. It just wasn't even a thought to me. And like you say, it just kind of, everything just can just flip in click of your fingers, and that can be it. Could you just kind of go into a little bit more detail in that classification and maybe some of the other things that could change throughout a para athlete's career, kind of versus the Olympic career?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, Olympic athletes are going to have transitions of their own, but specifically what we see, like with our para guys, or even like an example of like some of the guys that have to use prosthetics, for example, they can have issues with those when they're traveling, with how much to use them, how much not to use them, and some of the lifestyle implications of that. So I work with an athlete who used to get pressure sores from using his prosthetics, and that would mean he'd need a lot of like rest and recovery at home, which meant he couldn't kind of go out with the kids, couldn't do things with the kids, couldn't do the housework. So the impact that had on his family and his children, you know, and the benefits the sport got from it, but the household sort of suffered as a result. So some of the work and the support that we can give around that is like looking at what other things can you use? You know, could you use a wheelchair a little bit more? Could you rest at these times? Like, what does that look like across the day? And how can we get you more time with your children? Like in a seated situation, for example, you know, where you can rest, but also interact with your children. So that's just one area of transition that perhaps a para athlete would need to sort of make adaptations to. And then you've got, and this isn't just like related to one athlete, but a few of those conversations that we had around that, there was a resistance to use a wheelchair because of how they would be perceived. So it's the identity piece again, how they perceive themselves, what others are going to say to them when they're in a wheelchair, that would sometimes cause more issues with the prosthetic because they just didn't want to use a chair. But the second they started, they saw the benefit of it, and then they were comfortable with using it. And some of the other factors are things like talent transfer, for example, with our para guys. That's really, really common in para sport. And some of the transitions within the talent transfer is like getting used to a culture of one sport and then adapting to a culture of another sport can be really challenging. And I'll give an example of like an athlete going from being a swimmer to a triathlete, which seemed to be quite a common pathway. Like all of a sudden you've got a structured swim plan and you know exactly what you're doing, you know what you're getting up to do. You move into triathlon, which is three sports, you've got to fit into your weekly plan. And there's certain things that are timetabled, and then there's certain things you can just go ahead and do them when that fits in with you. What? You know, and some of the athletes were like, I'm really struggling with this because this is just not what I'm used to. So, you know, in a lifestyle capacity, we can support like that adjustment to the new culture, the new way. How can we fit this in your weekly plan? What does that look like? And yeah, like sometimes with some of the para guys, they have degenerative conditions as well. So we need to support them as, let's say, visually impaired. So as their eyesight degenerates over a period of time, what they're able to do for themselves will change. So we can support that adaptation process. And if they have other conditions, things like that, we can support those transitions as well. So yeah, there's quite a lot in the para space to go through. Yeah.
I'm glad that you got in about the kind of progressive condition as well, because again, that's something that I can resonate with. Mm-hmm. You know, we've spoken about classification going the other way and, you know, maybe your classification number going up, but yeah. Also there's that added challenge of, you know, a progressive condition could get worse, which means you go the other way, and it's equally as challenging sometimes to deal with that as well, I guess.
Yeah, and it's the mental health aspects of that as well, isn't it? An acceptance of that can be really hard for athletes. It's like, okay, I know that this is going to get worse, that's making me feel anxious. Okay, how can we support you with that anxiety? How can we make things more manageable for you? Who do you need to speak to about that? And just making sure that isn't overlooked, because on top of that, that could that lead to a classification change, which could then just, I suppose, worsen how one feels about oneself. So it's not to be overlooked, that, because I know that that is quite significant when that happens to an individual, for sure.
Would you be able to give us some examples of the kind of support that's provided by the performance lifestyle team to kind of help an athlete's personal and professional development, kind of what that framework looks like?
Yeah, sure. So as PL advisors, we're sort of trained in coaching and mentoring skills. So we very much look at like, where is the athlete right now? Where do we need to start with? So if an athlete's coming to us and they go, look, I haven't got a clue what I want to do with the rest of my life, like, help. We'll very much start with the groundwork, the exploring, like, what are your interests? What are your passions? Like, let's just start there. And then let's grow from there. So then we might like help them explore different things. And then we'll sort of create a plan with them to kind of get started on different things. So the coaching is, I suppose, sort of the golden thread that runs throughout everything that we do. But on top of that, we have access to personal development awards. So like funding grants from UK Sport to kind of help support athletes engage in courses and do different training to kind of help them move towards what their career goals are. And there's other things that we can plug them into. We get companies coming to us all the time of like, we'd really love to work with Paralympic athletes, but how can we get them on board? What can we do to kind of support? So there's a lot of things that go on in the background where we're upskilling sort of companies around, this is what para athletes are looking for. Like, what can you offer kind of in this space for them? So we try to kind of get a good mix of different companies to kind of consider taking on our para athletes. And now more and more companies want para athletes because they're realizing what they're missing out on by not.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's great. You know, we have quite a lot of networks in those areas and athletes that engage in performance lifestyle get the benefit of all those networks, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what you said around exploring, you know, strengths and weaknesses and things that mean a lot to you and, you know, your values and things like that. I think kind of having transitioned out of sport, that was a lot of the work that I had to do at the very beginning of that journey, as opposed to when I was swimming. And I think it's really interesting and obviously really great that that's being encouraged even more whilst the athletes are still competing. And I think that's so important to, I guess, a smooth transition, which is never easy, but putting that work in and doing that groundwork while you're still competing, you know, for me, I think that's massive.
Yeah. And we know that is huge. And one of the biggest challenges is having athletes like work alongside doing the sport, particularly some of our para athletes that have sort of minimal energy to disseminate across lots of different things, you know, and that might be because of a neurological condition where they have fatigue, where they have pain, and their everything goes into their sport and they've got nothing left to do extracurricular. So those are the kind of groups that are sometimes a bit more vulnerable to being able to take up those opportunities. So focusing on more flexible work opportunities and placements is something that we're really keen to keep pushing and trying to get from these employers as well to meet those needs, really.
And Emily, have you got any favourite examples of Paralympians successfully transitioning out of sport? What are your favourites?
I think the best ones are the boring ones, those that they know what they're doing, they know where they're going, it's really easy, it's really smooth, and you're like, okay, it was underwhelming for me, but we've done our job, you know, because they're all set up and it's a really smooth transition. Some athletes, however, do have more of a bumpy ride. And I think there's a couple that kind of stand out in terms of different examples. One corridor conversation that I'd completely overlooked that I had with an athlete, which was literally just mentioning a company to, led to them doing an expedition, a challenge. Prior to that, it was a bumpy transition out of their program, I have to say, which then led to them doing a para solo row across the Atlantic and achieving what they then deemed their gold medal. So like, whilst they didn't achieve a gold medal in sport, when they reflected, they were like, actually, this is my gold medal. Like, I wouldn't have done this without going on the course that they went on before, prior to that. So it completely changed the shape of their direction and what they ended up doing, but in a really positive way. So from sometimes an a transition out of sport that can be really difficult for lots of different reasons can come some real richness and some real like achievement beyond sport. And I think that's what I took from that experience of, for something that can feel so bad at the time, actually, there was a reason why that person was meant to go on and do what they did, because they wouldn't have achieved that had they have done well in sport, arguably. So like, that was one that really stood out. And another one that was kind of really difficult for this particular person that found a job where things should have gone 100% smoothly because it was the perfect job for this person. The people they were working with should have understood disability more than anyone. And they experienced, you know, some real difficulty in that role, but that actually led to them deciding to go self-employed and just working for themselves and getting their job satisfaction without all of these other issues, and like really finding who they are, where they should be, and then sort of achieving, you know, their happiness and their success in their own way as well. So sometimes, even if things don't go well as the transition in out of sport, the journey beyond that, they can also achieve and often go on to achieve success beyond that, because that mentality and that drive is still there. It doesn't just drop off a cliff when they transition out of sport. They want to go and be the first person to get up a really rocky multi-terrain mountain, and if it means being carried the final bit to the top, they'll do it because they've achieved more goals. So that mindset like never falters. And yeah, I'm just in awe and of some of the athletes and some of the stories that I hear once they've transitioned out of sport. It's pretty amazing. They just go on to continue that athlete mindset in challenging themselves beyond sport. So it's really positive.
It is so, like, transitioning out of sport is so varied for each athlete. Yeah, it is quite difficult to kind of say this is the blueprint of how it happens, because that doesn't exist, does it really?
No, and again, it'll depend on like the age of the athlete as well, and the nature of their condition. So like we have athletes with intellectual impairment, and often they have neurodiversity as well. So they're often heavily supported by their parents, and they can struggle, you know, because sometimes all they can tolerate is just doing their sport. And they really struggle to kind of set their focus on doing anything other than their sport. And they can find themselves struggling when it comes to transition if they haven't engaged in using the PDA and trying to upskill in other areas. And then you've got some that parents have got a business, they're already working for them, so they just default back to working for the parents. You've got some that are like teachers that are doing like the teacher training. So, you know, we support with like, if they're doing placements and things like that, we'll speak to like the tutors and help make sure we sort of collaborate on a plan to make sure that that athlete can do their training within the right period and time frame, and be flexible with achieving that. And then often they'll go off and, you know, become a teacher and just do like a mainstream normal job. So you get some on that level, you get some that just get snapped up by TV work. And so, you know, the scope is just, it's so vast and it's so different. And you've got some that are like incredibly successful Paralympic athletes, and they've not done a day's contemplation about what do I want to do when I leave sport. And, you know, so then they'll come to us in a bit of a panic of, oh, it looks like things are going to end for me post games, and I'm not sure I've got much left in me, so I need to do something about that now. So, you know, it's, you get a real mix of characters and mindsets around transition.
And it's interesting that change, the 2 year period change a little bit, because I think in any transition, whether you're an athlete or not, sometimes it does take, I would say, 2 years in most walks of life.
Yeah.
To really acclimatise to a new job or a new, I don't know, area where you're living, for instance, anything like that. So it is interesting. I was just reflecting last night, I think it probably took me 2 years to not kind of think of myself as an athlete, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
So it does take a little while, for sure.
I think as well, particularly early on in my career, anything outside of swimming was kind of discouraged. It was kind of, you're a swimmer, that's what you focus on, you don't focus on other things. So I think that kind of culture is obviously massively changed now, and, you know, looking at the athletes a bit more holistically as a person, and kind of exploring those other interests and things have been encouraged now, as opposed to kind of being suppressed. That obviously has massively changed, and I think that's going to give people, again, a better platform to have a smoother transition.
Yeah, and again, we are often dependent on the culture in the sport and those voices, you know, higher up the sort of leadership chain as to what they're encouraging. And but there's definitely been a shift, like just overall, I would say, and a lot of coaches are encouraging athletes to finish their education and do these things because they've started to see the value in why it's important. And they know themselves, you know, if they just work all the time and they've got nothing else in their lives, like that doesn't lead to a very healthy balance or healthy mindset. And I think the other thing that I know that, again, this sort of crosses both para and Olympic, but sometimes the perception of workmates when they transition out is that you're going to be amazing at this because you're an Olympic gold medal winner, or you're a Paralympic gold medal winner, go off and do this. That's completely out of their comfort zone, that they've got no knowledge or no base to go off and do. And the expectation is that you're going to be amazing because that's your background. So that sense of failure and like lack of confidence, but that perception of others that you're going to be brilliant, puts a lot of pressure on athletes that move into different areas that are expected to be amazing at something straight away. And it's like, no, I was great because I had to graft really hard to get to that level. And it's no different in a workplace, but there's a perception in the workplace that you come in as a gold medal winner and you're just going to come in and just smash it straight away. But it's not always the case. And again, that can affect some athletes' kind of perception and confidence.
I feel like that's kind of the major anxiety point in my life, to be honest with you, so that I can resonate with that.
Yeah, but and I think, you know, when you watch Strictly and things like that, people expect the sports people to come on and be the best at Strictly. But if you think, like, it's a whole new set of skills and things to learn. Like, it's completely different from sport. You're using different muscles, you're moving your body in a different way. Like, you're on the TV all the time, you're being watched by all those people. Like, it's very different. But again, that pressure to kind of, you've got to win, you've got to be the best because this is where you are in your sport, you know. Yeah. But we almost don't assimilate that in any other area other than, you know, sports people, and that expectation is great, isn't it? So, yeah.
You're about to start a new role with the UKSI, if I'm right in thinking. So could you tell us a bit more about that and what that involves?
All the research kind of pointed towards that actually athletes need more than anything, like up to 2 years post sport. That's when things can really kind of start to unravel and difficulty can really kick in. So that's kind of how the role evolved as to why it was needed. And we saw this ourselves as well. You know, sometimes it just wasn't enough sort of 3 to 6 months of supporting athletes that have perhaps been in the system for years and years and years. Perhaps, you know, some will bury their heads in the sand and do nothing about it and then have a panic last minute. You know, everyone's got their different way of coping and managing themselves when they're in sport. So that this sort of role was born out of that, really. And how can we kind of learn from what comes out of that role and put that into the start of the system more? So, like, what are we learning then from athletes that are coming out within those 2 years that we can actually make better for them from the start of their sort of journey into sport? So that's kind of one of the areas. But a lot will be around, like, coaching and supporting athletes after sport that perhaps need that extra bit of help and guidance. And we also know that quite often the first job that athletes go into isn't the job. It's not the job they're happiest in. Like, there's research has been shown to highlight that it's actually the second and third job that athletes tend to stick to and find that they enjoy. So having this support in place for up to 2 years allows athletes to bounce back to us and go, do you know what? I'm really struggling in this role. I don't think it's for me. Like, can you help me navigate what I've enjoyed from this job, what I haven't, and just look for other opportunities, like support me with other opportunities. So it allows, I suppose, more flexibility for athletes to get that support once they've left the sport, which hasn't existed before. So,
and why do you think it is so significant that the UKSI has created this bespoke role in the Paralympic space, especially?
What they were finding is, and my own experience, so I've actually supported some athletes in this space prior to the job became available, because actually the realities of some Paralympic athlete journeys when they leave sport aren't particularly great. Some are wonderful and we never hear about them. They just go off and do what they do and they're set up and off they go. The ones we tend to hear about are those that struggle. So, like I say, my example of an athlete that went into a job that should have been perfect, everything in writing looked like that was the perfect job for them, experienced discrimination in the role, accessibility issues. It impacted their sense of self, their self-confidence, their self-worth, and their mental health significantly. So having more of a parallel lens and an understanding around, like, the Equality Act, discrimination in the workplace, employment law, you know, just a basic level of understanding of what employers need to kind of help support that person in the workplace. Luckily, it's an area I've worked in historically. So I've got that kind of knowledge and understanding, which was helpful to that athlete at the time. So I think some of those challenges around identity, around those struggles, around those changes in condition, like both physically and mentally, you're transitioning a para athlete who's used to just getting up and smashing sport every single day into like a stationary workplace where they're more limited in their movement, they're more limited in what they can do, but they want to be treated as an equal, and then just not getting that kind of treatment, like, can be hugely polarizing as well. You know, they've gone from being hugely successful, hugely decorated, adorned and praised, to feeling like an absolutely worthless individual and human operating in a place where they should be championed and supported and better understood. So that personally was quite a sad case for me. But that person is doing a lot better now. So I think, you know, that's just the reality of some para athletes transitions out of sport. So having someone there they can still talk to that understands what they've gone from and where they're going to, you know, they sort of said how valuable that was for them.
So we've got one last question for you, Emily. And it's a question that we've been asking to all of our guests, and it's a pretty big one. What do the Paralympics mean to you?
Oh, the Paralympics mean to me, I mean, I look forward to them more than the Olympics. I'm like, right, can we just rush through this and just get to the paras? Because no offense to you, Goldie. I think for me, like seeing what para athletes can do, like challenging the boundaries, like that self-perception of what you can do. And actually, I was having a conversation with my 7-year-old the other day who wanted to close his eyes and walk down the street with me with his eyes closed and me lead him. And I said, you know, that there are people that can actually run, you know, with not and not be able to see, and they can do this and they can do that. And he was just, well, how do they do that? Like, I feel really unbalanced. And, you know, so for me, like that inspiration, that inspiring, like the younger generation to actually see that even if you get a lifelong condition, even if you get a severe injury that stops you doing X, Y, and Z, like, the Paralympics helps them to focus on what they can do. Like, wow, what that person can do. And they've only got one leg or one arm or, you know, they can't see. It's just incredible, I think, like the change that that could make on a young person's life and how they see themselves and their ability. I just think it's huge.
Massive thank you to Emily for joining us and sharing insight into life outside of sport for athletes.
If you want to learn more about the UK Sports Institute or Paralympics GB, you can follow them on socials via @UKSportsInst or @ParalympicsGB. Follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode, leave a review, or if you listen on Spotify, share your thoughts through the poll.
Until next time, thanks for listening and we'll catch up soon.